Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, checks in with us, and he's been working on the ACC a bit. Last few weeks, he goes league to league and covers them, combs through those teams. And, Brett, before we get into that, anything about the draft that piqued your interest? Anything that stood out?
Hey, good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me back on. And, you know, with the NFL draft, it's always interesting to me because I really cover the college side 100%. I don't know too much about the pro teams, what their needs are.
Right. Right.
Specific ties like that. So to see the 49ers move all the way up to number 3 and draft the North Dakota State quarterback, that was kind of shocking to me because that's a kid that he'd only played 17 games. I think it was the fewest passing attempts by a high pick like that, some 300 pass attempts. Is really a small sample size and on the lower level of competition. So we're interested to see how that turns out over the next couple of years. When you have a guy like Justin Fields, a very proven product, just sitting there. So, it reminds me a little bit of when the Bears took Trubisky over Deshaun Watson, where you had an untested prospect with Trubisky over, a national champion caliber quarterback with Watson.
You have been digging inside the ACC last few days, couple of weeks, et cetera. What are you unearthing?
Yeah, so about halfway through the ACC, I go from the bottom up, the previous year's standings. About 8 teams in, and a couple unlikely suspects are popping out as potential top 25 teams. NC State being one of them, and Boston College. These are programs. Well, first with NC State, 2019 they were coming off a 4-win season, and Dave Doran, who had historically been a solid coach there, usually 8 or 9 wins. First 4-win season there. So he had to rotate both coordinators out. He hired 2 new coordinators, but then the pandemic hit and they weren't able to install anything. Now, fast forward, somehow it worked. Both coordinators had impressive gains on their sides of the ball, and NC State improved from 4 wins to 8 wins, and a lot of that is back. I mean, almost the entire defense is back. Their star running back duo is back, and their recruiting profile has also increased the last couple of years, so all those guys are coming of age. So I think you have a pretty solid top 25 contender, kind of a sleeper with NC State.
And Boston College, year one with a new regime, and Phil Jurkovec was a very good player, too. He was looking for his shot. He left Notre Dame. Didn't get much of a shot there at all because of Ian Book, and maybe they didn't treat him quite well at Notre Dame. But nonetheless, that when I watched him play, I was very impressed.
Yeah, he's really the one guy that changed their outlook, really. He came in from Notre Dame, like you said. He's a Pittsburgh product. It was just night and day between the quarterback play that Boston College had recently compared to him. I mean, he was elusive in the pocket. Not necessarily a runner per se, but shifty enough in the pocket to extend plays, give his guys more time to get open, and then and then deliver. So, very clutch. He led a couple game-winning drives. He had UNC on the ropes early in the season there, and then also had Clemson. They built a lead against Clemson at halftime and came up a little bit short. But I was very impressed by him specifically, but also Coach Hafley, Jeff Hafley, one of the head coaches I got to talk to in the preseason. You can just feel his energy through the phone about him wanting to rebuild Boston College into a consistent winner. He loves that region, that part of the country, and just a younger coach, but really authentic, and that's going to sell in recruiting nowadays. So, I like what they have coming back. They had a nice record, but I think with an easier schedule this year, that's kind of the key with them is an easier schedule, and I think they can get 7, 8, 9 wins.
Yeah, I just got within the last couple of days, got a nice note from Lance Leipold. I'll get you off the ACC briefly. The Kansas hire, usually a death trap historically for whoever, but do you like that hire? Brett, are you there?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Yes. The Kansas hire, just to get you away from the ACC briefly, with Lance Leipold, your thoughts there?
Yeah, so with Lance, I mean, he was a multi-time national champion coach at the Division III level, so has the winning lineage. He turned Buffalo around pretty much overnight. They had, I think it was almost an All-American candidate with Jared Patterson. He was putting up like 200 rushing yards a game. But on a program level, I think that's a really nice hire for Kansas. A guy in Leipold who was, you know, one of the higher targets in the coaching carousel this last cycle. So he was coveted, and somehow Kansas pulled him out of, pulled him out of there. So we'll see. Now the last Buffalo coach they hired, Turner Gill, that didn't turn out so hot, but it's not a fair comparison. I think that Leipold is a lot more experienced, as that winning, that winning culture, and we'll see what he can do. It's probably the hardest coaching job in Power 5 right now, so it's going to be a tough one.
Not far from you, up in your state, you've been looking some at Pitt. What is their outlook for the season coming up?
Yeah, so with Pittsburgh, really what it was last year, they finally had their elite defense in 2019. It all came back for 2020, and again, it was a great defense. Top 5, top 10, and a lot of my metrics, a couple All-American candidates up front. The thing is, though, all of that is gone now. That defensive line, a lot of that was drafted a couple, last week, and their safety duo, DeMar Hamlin and Paris Ford, are gone. So the star power from the defense is gone. I trust Narduzzi will produce a solid product on that side of the ball, but it's not going to be a nation's elite unit again. What's been holding them back the last couple of years is offense. They tried to switch their coordinators to Mark Whipple, go for a pass-heavy offense, and that hasn't really clicked. And, this is kind of crazy to think, but Kenny Pickett is back again. I think it's the sixth straight year starting. Of course, he was the guy that led that upset over number two Miami all the way back in 2017. He started ever since, and he gets an extra year of eligibility. So, yeah, with Pitt, I think they're kind of stuck in the middle of the pack in the Coastal with, an above-average defense now coming a little bit down to earth, and maybe an offense that's below average getting a little bit better. But that all nets out to probably a 5 or 6 or 7 win season.
We talk with people all the time in states about the breakdown when it comes to fan bases, meaning which fans pull for which schools inside said state. Up in Pennsylvania, what's the percentage breakdown Pitt versus Penn State among fans?
Well, I think Penn State's the bigger program. I mean, they've had the more recent success, and also they just have a bigger alumni pool. I mean, it's one of the biggest schools in the country when you look at alumni count and student count. So, Penn State's located in the central part of the state. I think from anywhere east of that is all Penn Staters. And then from west of that is probably split Pittsburgh and Penn State. So I'd probably say it's, 80-20 Penn State if you had to go between those two schools. Now, out here in Pennsylvania, you do have a lot of other Big Ten alumni and ACC alumni that are kind of, it's like a melting pot. So, but if you had to pick one, it's mostly Penn State, a little bit of Pitt, a little bit of Rutgers over the border there, a lot of Philly City schools that don't have football, unfortunately, like St. Joe's and a LaSalle and a Drexel. Villanova has a FCS program, but a lot of that Big Five basketball is what the talk is around here.
Going back historically, if folks are old enough, the time in that state for those two schools where it overlaps would be between 75-76. Pitt won the national championship in 76 with Johnny Majors and Tony Dorsett, and then all the way up to about 82. And that's when Coach Fazio had taken over at Pitt. And Joe Pa, of course, the coach through all of this. But that would have been the time. That would have been a fun time to live in the state of Pennsylvania because Pitt was up then for about a 6-7 year period. Penn State's pretty much been, to a certain level up for the most part. And that would have been the heyday, I guess, Brett.
Yeah, for sure. I think the previous generation got to see it live firsthand, where it was bitter, it was nationally relevant, it was ranked teams. That's kind of gone away. I think since Pitt took their stadium off campus, that kind of hurt the vibe around there. And then also, just kind of the demographic shift out there, where Western Pennsylvania used to be one of the hotbeds of recruiting. If you go back in the 70s and 80s and some of the 90s, that Ohio and then Western PA, the Whippoorwill, that was some of the recruiting hotbeds. So now that has kind of shifted out, that it's a little bit less talent in that region now. And Pittsburgh, what do? Do you go recruit Ohio? Do you go down to Florida? So they've been kind of lost in the recruiting game, and that has suffered their program too.
Couple of teams that you've been working on, back to the ACC conversation, Georgia Tech and Coach Jeff Collins. What's the immediate future look like?
Yeah, I think the future's bright. Now, this was arguably the biggest, coaching rebuild job ever when he took over for Paul Johnson in 2019. Because, of course, Paul Johnson with that triple option, you really build a roster to a specific offense like that where there's, no tight ends. It's all these running backs, his A back, B back, C back. Anyway, so going through that transition year was huge. We knew it'd be tough. Two and nine or 2-10, they lose the Citadel. But coming back in 2020, you saw some gains, at least statistically. On film, you see the gains. They look like a more complete offense. Defense made a little bit of in the win column yet. Tough schedule, a lot of close losses. They still, I think, finished with 3 wins. So I think finally, now in 2021, you finally are going to get all those efficiencies of the coaching staff continuity, the roster continuity. I think they have their program leader in Jeff Sims, a quarterback, dual threat kid. He was a former Florida State commit. He really looks legit. And, their offensive line is finally picking the new scheme, more modern offense, good running back duo, with Jahmyr Gibbs, this other freshman, he's electric, and Jordan Mason, the physical guy. So long story short, I think they're finally ready for an increase in the win column. It's been a couple years building here, one of the biggest rebuilds. And to speak to Jeff Collins real quick, he loves that area. He's from Atlanta. And that's another coach I got to interview last preseason and just loves, like I said, loves the region, loves the culture. And I think that's going to do wonders in recruiting what should be coming the hotbed of all of high school football, Georgia.
I know you've been studying Florida State coach Mike Norvell year two. What's up there?
Yeah, so I'm sure he's excited to get to year two. This year one was brutal. Just a lot of different factors. It was these guys' fourth defensive coordinator in 4 years, the fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years, and obviously third head coach in 4 years. So a lot of transition for these players. A lot of them transferred out or opted out. It was kind of a mess in that regard. Towards the end of the year, you did have some buy-in from some younger players and some bright spots. Now, I think Jordan Travis, the quarterback, really helped save their season. And I say saved. I know they finished with 3 wins. They could have gone over. They were losing it to FCS Jacksonville State, and Jordan Travis came in at halftime and created a spark. He's a dual threat, really a runner. He's got to improve a little bit in the pass game, but just electric with the ball. Of course, at quarterback, they bring in Mackenzie Milton, the old UCF quarterback. That'll be a quarterback battle. He looked great in the spring game. That'll continue all the way into fall camp. And lastly, the defense needs to improve. It was probably the worst defense possibly in Florida State history. I look back on this, so since Willie Taggart took over 3 years ago, they've allowed 40-plus in 11 games. And before that, to go 11 games, you had to go all the way back to 2003. Those Bowden teams, he only allowed one 40-plus plus defensive collapse over 15 years. So just historically bad defense. We'll see what they have coming back and if Adam Poehler can get that defense turned around. But I think it's another rebuild year. I think you need another year and start to turn the corner maybe next season.
Do you get to watch the Notre Dame spring game?
Not yet. That's on the queue. I know that's always historically a great one, the blue-gold game. They were playing. I saw their names come up a lot in the draft. That offensive line is all in the NFL now. So that's going to be tough, and Ian Book gone. They bring in Jack Cohen from Wisconsin. He was a solid game manager. He was, a pretty efficient quarterback, so we'll see how that transfers. But, did you get to see that one?
Yeah, one of the very few I watched. And hard to tell. I'm not a big spring game guy, but they split it up pretty evenly. The offense struggled. The defense looks way ahead of the offense. They're sticking with these veteran receivers who don't make plays. Five-star Jordan Johnson, you probably saw the news, has already transferred out right after the spring game. They didn't even target him in that game. You got a five-star recruit who's been there a year now, and I saw him in the lineup for a couple of plays. They didn't even look his way. He was just a – I don't even know what he was. And the next day or two, he's already transferred. Word is maybe Missouri for him. But don't expect a whole lot of highlights when you watch that. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, well, with Notre Dame, I mean, the wide receiver core you'd have thought was something where an incoming freshman or sophomore could really break into the lineup because that wasn't exactly a loaded position group. So that's kind of surprising to me. They need offensive firepower, so that's going to hurt losing him, especially in a quarterback transition year there. So, yeah, we'll see. It's interesting now without their ACC tie how they'll look going forward.
Tell everybody, Brett, how they can get all your information.
Yeah, thanks. It's at Pick Six Previews on Twitter and picksixpreviews.com. It's an annual season preview book. It's a one-man operation, just me, and it's I cover all 66 Power 5 teams, real in-depth, the numbers, the film, coach interviews, all combined into a book there. So that's coming out late June, and we'll continue talking here each Wednesday.
Appreciate it, sir. See you next week.
Thanks, Bill.